to Around Comics. To another episode of Around Comics episode 361, Robots and Doctors. I'm Brian Salazar. With me, as always, is Christopher Niesman, and Thomas Caters is here for the beginning of the show. It's kind of a miracle.
Tom's here.
Or we just started late, and Tom showed up.
Usual time I show up, man.
What's going on, gentlemen?
It's really cold, like really, really cold. It's like winter and shit.
A lot of snow.
I'm done with fucking snow. I have nowhere to put snow anymore. It's
I scored points with the neighbors today. It's I was the guy that took out the snowblower and did the whole block.
So. Oh, wow. A hero.
Wow.
A hero for our times.
Not all heroes wear. Yeah. Some of them
do have snowblowers.
Some of them have snowblowers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cardinal jerseys. That's what some of them have.
Yeah. Oh, no, man. I go out there and it's the big hat and you can't tell I'm a Cardinal fan.
Even our listeners are shocked. Tom made it. First comment. Oh wow, Tom made it.
It's just. I showed up at the time I usually show up.
I did start scheduling the show at 8:15.
Yeah.
And that's funny. The first time we actually started right around 8:15. So I think that's the new time.
Mm-hmm. Probably have a couple updates and that kind of stuff for folks out there. We dropped an interview for the Patreons today. If you're just get the regular feed, or the regular Around Comics feed, you'll get 12 minute clip of my talk with the Space Bastards. That's Eric Peterson, Joe Aubrey, and Derek Robertson. And we had a great little chat, and that is out there. Derek Robertson. Yeah, he even dropped some knowledge that he's going to be doing Legends of the Dark Knight. He's writing and drawing a number one. He is super stoked about it. So I think there's probably even a pretty good chance that we may have him back to talk about that around the time it's coming out.
That's a relaunch of the Legends of the Dark Knight, I believe. Yes. Not mistaken.
I think the world needs another Batman book.
It can never be enough. There can never be
a new number one Batman.
The way I look at it, the more Batman books are out there, the more likely that one of them will be good. That's kind of how I look at it. So, you know, at least one. At least one will be good.
The fourth Joker, the realtor.
The realtor. God, don't give him any ideas. Hopefully, Jeff Johns does not watch this. That's all I can say.
I think we're safe. Sal and I did our ACTV WandaVision After Hours, which we were talking before the show. I'm really having a lot of fun doing that. I look forward to watching the show. I look forward to talking about it. It's a maybe after we're all done with the series. I don't know if Tom's watching it. Maybe we'll have to do a little. Nope. Oh, it's really good, Tom. I think you'll dig it.
I tried the first episode a couple times. Something about my brain is just like, go to sleep.
It is the most popular TV show on the planet, according to something I read on the
internet. My brain is like, this is like a old sitcom, and it's like, don't pay attention, just shut down.
I think this is Disney Plus's, this is their attempt to try and attract an older audience. They're just trying to.
Yeah. The Dick Van Dyke crowd.
Dick Van Dyke fans and Bewitched fans.
It's nothing against the show. I'm sure it's great. It's just both times I've tried to watch it, for whatever reason, my brain seat was like, oh, yeah, this is like an old, you know.
It sees black and white immediately.
It's just this is like Mystery Science Theater. Just go to sleep. Don't like pay attention.
So we do not have the capacity.
I watch it in the middle of the day sometime, and maybe my brain won't short circuit.
Yeah, I think you'll get into it. We're having fun with it. So yeah, that's some of the Patreon exclusive stuff. But we're always here doing this on Tuesdays, and then releasing as the audio show, and we talk about comics and comics culture and all that fun stuff. Which, speaking of, you guys want to jump in and
chat about?
Oh, what? Oh, yes. Whoa.
We have to talk about this Thursday, the premiere of the new streaming thing that we're doing, AC/D&D.
Oh my gosh, that's right.
Around Comics Plays Dungeons and Dragons, Chris and I have joined a Dungeons and Dragons group where we're going to be playing the Ghosts of Salt Marsh. And we already played the first session, so we didn't record that because we weren't sure how it would go. But it went so well that everybody was excited, and we're like, well, let's put it out live so that people can watch it. And so this Thursday, 7 p.m. on the YouTube, on the same, you know, all the same platforms that Around Comics comes out, there's going to be AC/D&D, The Ghosts of Salt Marsh, episode 2. So
you get to hear me do a really fucking terrible Scottish accent for my my bagpipe playing bard high elf, and Sal, how is your elf from Memphis?
Listen, man, my elf is a southern swamp drow. That's what he comes from, you know, just sort of a Cajun, southern swampy area. And so he's
taking care of business.
He's got a little twang to him. Yeah. we have the worst three of us. I think the other, you know, the other two party members are playing it pretty straight,
mm-hmm.
but you, me, and Tony have quite possibly the three worst elven accents.
Tony plays Russian elf.
It already sounds infuriating to listen to.
I said,
people are like, oh my God,
Scottish, Southern, and a Russian elf walk into a bar.
Nice broad accents.
Yes. I thought for sure, because I didn't know any of the other two, the other three people, the DM and the other two people that are playing the game. I didn't know them. I'd never met them before. And I thought for sure after the first session, they were just going to be like, guys, thanks. I appreciate it, but that's, we're cutting.
Or maybe just cut the accents.
No, they wanted us
a lot.
They wanted us to keep up with the chaos and just
keep the voices up.
Yeah, they loved it. So I thought it was a lot of fun. I think people will dig it. So look for that Thursday. Yeah, I didn't want to not plug that. We had to.
Yeah, I would do like a Crypt Keeper voice with like a bunch of terrible puns.
Well, if you want to join, Tom, I think we can.
I do not have the time.
That's why we did not ask.
Yeah, I would love to.
We knew better. We figured that Tom Versus was about as big of a push as we could.
Two nights a week would be pushing it.
It is every other Thursday.
Oh.
So it's not every week. So
Maybe I'll just pop in one time.
That'd be fun. I'll send you the links. You can just. I'm not going to get into it. All right.
Please. Comics. I was doing a lot of stuff. Did not read a ton of comics this week. So I know you guys want to talk about Rorschach number 5.
I definitely want to talk about Rorschach number 5 with Tom, because I have many questions about Rorschach. I read Rorschach number 5, and then I went back and I read 1 through 4 again.
You're right.
And I'm hoping you can help me understand this story. I don't know.
Maybe not.
I'm just a little confused as to, well, one, who the fuck is the investigator guy? We never find out his name. We never, he gets
hired. Doesn't the guy call him by a name, though,
in this issue? No, I just, in this issue, maybe.
Like a first name.
Is he a federal? Is he a federal agent?
I don't know. They never say. Yeah, he gets hired by the sort of campaign manager for Turley.
Mm-hmm. He's working in parallel to the FBI. He's like essentially, because Turley believes that Redford. I always think it's. I'm always like, does Robert Redford know that he's the Watchman? Has anyone informed Robert Redford of this? Because I just say it so casually, like, yeah, duh,
it's Redford.
It's Redford. So he assumes that Redford, the FBI is in his pocket and is not telling the truth. So this guy is kind of like working in parallel to that, in a sense.
Well, and that was so just to kind of go over it from my point of view is like, so Nixon sent in Dr. Manhattan to win the Vietnam War, and then we win the Vietnam War, and then in the 80s the squid drops, and reading it over again. And, that is mentioned, that moment is mentioned a lot in this book. And it made me think of something you said a long time ago, Tom. And I'm going to paraphrase
that. It made sense. I hope it made sense.
It absolutely made sense. You said it was about 9/11, and you said that you felt like 9/11 drove some people crazy. It broke people. And I think
Dennis Miller.
Yeah,
Dennis Miller.
One example of someone who's just like, "Whoa! Like, what happened to you?"
But as I was reading this again and again, and I kept thinking of the squid, that Ozymandias unleashes on New York and kills millions of people to save the planet. I feel like Tom King is sort of making a parallel between that and 9/11 in the United States, of that moment sort of driving people a little crazy. And if you look at that as sort of the squid drop in our reality, and then you look at this comic book as sort of the parallel to where we at politically in this country, it's like he's really talking about the sort of people on both sides of things that have been driven a little mad since that moment in time, for whatever reason, on sort of a, it's like on the one side, on the sort of conservative side, they've been watching Robert Redford becomes president, turns Vietnam into the 51st state. I think at that point is the 51st state, and it is a Democratic stronghold, this entire country of Vietnam. And so he's able to then leverage that so that he has run for 5 terms now successfully, has become president of the United States. And so you have this, very liberal president who's been running things. And now on the other side of it, you have this growing, support for this president, the Governor Turley, who is a conservative. And by the end of this issue, I think we kind of realize, he's kind of a Trump.
Everyone's bad.
Everyone's bad. That's what we sort of realize. Everyone's bad. And that's, you have that moment by the investigator guy. That's what I'm going to call him, because I don't know his fucking name, where, he meets Turley and he kind of comes to the realization, like, I'm working for a fucking lunatic. This man worships the comedian. And is possibly going to be the next president of the United States. He believes in, all these conspiracies. He thinks that, Redford has used, Rorschach and Laura Cummings to try and kill him. He believes there's these plots, the government is infested and all these things. And then he's
it's not paranoia if it's true.
it's not paranoia if it's true, but like I said, that it was weird. I had this moment of like this like, oh, that Alan Moore sort of in 1980, whatever five, he sort of, I think, saw some moment in time. And I don't know, maybe he was talking about something else, but I think 9/11 is a lot like when the squid dropped on New York. It drove people crazy. And we see that now, where like you have on both sides of the political aisle, you have sort of fringe elements that are just so wrapped up in what they believe, right or wrong, that they can't, because of fear, because they're terrified. And I think that's, you know, I know I'm getting like super deep into this weird sort of theory about it, but I'm just trying to, it was just like this parallel thing that I saw in this book that, you know, that, and Tom being, you know, politically very astute guy, he's seen probably way more and more of the sausage than any of us, having been in the CIA. And yet he's a very liberal, I think he's a very liberal minded guy. He lives in Washington, D.C., so he's around politics constantly. I don't know. I'm that was the weird thing. Like, until this issue, I wasn't sure what I was looking at, and I'm still not sure. I wasn't sure if I was looking at like, is Redford kind of the bad guy? Is Turley the bad guy? Is Rorschach the bad guy? Who's the bad guy?
Yes.
And like Tom said, they're all nobody. Yes. Good.
Yes. Nobody. The answer is yes.
They're all. Yeah. I mean, yeah, because it's like, I actually think the TV show did this a little bit too, is like the idea of like what the squid did to everyone, you know, like is a major element of the story, you know, like it's made people, it took people who, you know, have all kinds of other problems in their life. And now this is the problem in their life. And now, you know, like, yeah, like we see very often in our worlds, people who have a lot of things that aren't going right for them, whether mental health wise or, you know, economically or whatever it is that's causing them angst, they find a thing that now becomes the thing that is the squid is why this is happening. You know, it becomes like this
the answer, thing, right?
It's the answer, you know, like this, obviously this Laura woman, she grew up in a very, she was taught that the squid was the reason why these things happen. You know, she comes from a very broken family and she's internalized that. Now she's going out and she's almost like evangelizing it to other people who have problems. Right. And they're like all of a sudden they're like, oh, I'm Rorschach. That's the answer to like my problem, you know, like
why
this is the solution now, you know? So it's like, but then also you see with politically, it's just like that idea. Yeah. Of like the squid kind of everything's broken, you know, like the, politics is broken. Like people who are already broken are worse off. And like, they're gravitating towards these things that aren't a solution to them. If anything, it's making it worse. Right. And then it's the violence of it, you know, of like the, these people sort of being drawn towards these violent solutions to their problems. And like, it's just that feeling of like, everything's kind of like the center can't hold anymore. And everything's like spinning off from that event that happened. Yeah. So it's like, you know, and the interesting thing is like this issue, you know, probably one of the least amounts of like action you could have like in a comic book, right? Like very, very talky, right? You know, but super interesting, right? Because I really, it's probably one of my favorite issues so far, because I think it's the one that's starting to kind of tie everything together where it's like, oh, I get what this is about, like what Sal was saying, you know, like it's about like everyone, the squid messed everyone up and now everyone's like not psychically controlling their brain, is like, these people are insane. Like this guy, you know, he makes that joke about, he saw Dr. Manhattan with with the comedian, and he's like, which one is Superman and which one is man? I won't tell you, you know, like the idea of like this person idolizing this character we know is not good. Like he's, you know, like you certainly Dr. Manhattan has things that you would be like, Dr. Manhattan's not great, but Dr. Manhattan's also, you know, like it was just a very telling moment to be like, actually, no, you know, the comedian is Superman, you know, Dr. Manhattan's just a man, you know, like.
And at the same time, seeing the people talk about Turley in the way that they do of like, he's this, you know, honest and good man that's going to save us from the commie Redford, and, you know, obviously very topical, but at the same time, it's like the genuineness that they express themselves about this guy who we know now is, you know, up until this point, we really didn't know much about Turley.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, this is the first time we really met him, and you see, you know, kind of what he's about. And he's obviously a bit of a
LBJ toilet scene, you know, come in, talk to him, I'm on the toilet. Yeah. Real power move.
That's right. Yeah. I forgot about that LBJ used to do that. Yeah.
But at least I think he was in a stall. This guy is just like
taking a dump, reading the paper.
Yeah, it seems, I don't know. I wouldn't do that. Even if I had the power to like.
At least he had the common decency to make him walk out or ask him to leave before he wiped.
Yeah, let's get out of here. I gotta
finish. That's two comic books that came out last week that did that then.
Well, you know.
Space Bastards 2.
It's the same damn thing. It's in the zeitgeist right now.
That was a thing too, like
it's in the ether.
Laura going out and sort of finding her Rorschachs because she believes this thing that her, you know, that her father told her, and now she's sort of infecting. But wow, what the
drop my
did you have that can mite with like a little thing on
it? It fell, it dropped directly underneath the microphone, so I couldn't have dropped it in a worse place. I apologies to everyone listening to this show.
I have to start over.
Ruined. I'll have to edit that out. This was definitely the most interesting or intriguing, I think, issue, like you said, because things seem to sort of, you know, take shape to the point where it's like, okay, I kind of see now where he's going or what, you know, what he's trying to say to some degree. Cause I'll be honest, up until this point, like while I enjoyed it, I was every issue, I'm just like, I don't think I'm getting
what's happening.
I'm not sure what's going on.
Hey, what's going on?
Yeah. I love Tom's stuff, but I do find myself going, okay, to get this, I'm going to have to go back and reread these issues coming up to this one. And so there's part of me that is just like, just get the hardcover when it comes out.
Yeah, I can understand that for sure. I did, like I said, I went back and read the first four issues after reading this issue because I felt like this was like, okay, they're explaining things, but I feel like I don't remember enough from the previous issues.
Who's Dr. Manhattan?
I don't know.
What happened? Also, the art is great in it, even though it's, you know, anytime you can get a great drawing of a man on a toilet.
Toilet, yeah. Not every day.
Not every day. Can't get that every day. Not every comic book is going to give you that. Well, apparently some will, because Chris also has one that.
Some of
it's apparently a thing.
In the zeitgeist, it's in the ether. Everyone knows
it is.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Do you ever wish you could sit in on a conversation with some of your favorite authors and listen to them talk about their writing process, their path to publication, and of course, their newest novels? Hi, I'm Marissa Meyer, bestselling author of The Lunar Chronicles, and I would love for you to check out the Happy Writer podcast, where every week I talk with other writers about books, craft, inspiration, and how to bring a little more joy into our lives. The Happy Writer is available wherever you get your podcasts, or find us on Instagram at Happy Writer Podcast.
Yeah, so how many? It's going to be a 12-issue series?
I believe so.
We're about halfway through. It feels like that series, and I know it's on a very regular schedule, but it feels like Rorschach has been coming out for like a year and a half.
Yeah, I don't know if it's been monthly. Has it been monthly? I don't know.
I don't know. It doesn't also, great cover to this issue.
Yes.
Yeah. It's an awesome cover.
Yeah, time is just a construct right now. So
yeah, time's not real, man.
We're just covered in snow, so everything is just white. There's no shape or form. It's all just one big mass.
Yeah. Time is a flat circle, man.
All right. What else? What have you been reading? Well, I have something I can talk about, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
If we're done
we haven't talked about this yet.
We did not talk about that. I did finish that as well. If you'd like to talk about that, we can certainly talk about it.
Absolutely. It's this is the third for the audio folks. Sorry, we're showing things to the camera. This is book three of Hellblazer: Rise and Fall. It's on the DC Black Label imprint. It's written by Tom Taylor with art by Derek Robertson with Diego Rodriguez, and. As we mentioned earlier, I talked with Derek Robertson earlier this week and told him that I don't know what is going on, but the level up on this, I was like, dude, you've always been really good, but this was next level from stuff you've done in the past. And he was, he's like, yeah, it's just everything kind of worked on this, and he loved working on it. And it was a really I once again, any of the DC Black Label stuff, especially in this oversized format, I definitely will check out anytime it hits the stands, because they've been doing some really fun stuff.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this whole series. And like you said, I think his art, I don't know if it's just the format or he had more time to work with it or something, but I really felt like it helped his art, and I enjoyed it a lot. I enjoyed the writing a lot. I thought it was a very John Constantine. it was the John Constantine that I really enjoy, which is doesn't take itself too seriously.
Yeah, I mean, he's a complete bastard, but there's some very darkly funny moments in this.
Yes.
You know, from him and other situations.
Absolutely. And you see, you know, I mean, he's with Satan and demons and all the, you know, magic and people dying and possessed.
Lucifer.
Yes. And all these things that, you know, you want to see in a Constantine book. But a lot of times I feel like Constantine books just are trying to be Alan Moore. You know, our take, you know, they try and just take it a little too seriously, where this had a little fun with it, even though it was very dark, and there were very dark and scary moments in it. And there were, like you said, there was also moments of levity. The only the only thing about it that I the ending on it, it was a very Constantine kind of ending, where it's like he once again figures a way how to trick a demon, and I while I enjoyed it, it was just a touch, something about it. I was like, but otherwise,
I got to that part, and I don't want to spoil it, but I read it and I was just like, yeah, that probably not my favorite. And I'm glad that they didn't end there. There was actually a little bit of an epilogue to the story that kind of wrapped things up, which I felt was a better it that stuck the landing better than the actual resolution with the demon. But as soon as I kind of got through the part where he does what he does to kind of trick this demon, I just kind of shook my head for a second. I'm like, Sal's going to fucking hate that.
Yeah. But you thought I was going to hate it for a different reason.
Yes.
But,
yes.
And I didn't hate it. It was a little off for me. I didn't love it. But I did.
Because I'm a much bigger Anglophile than you are.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It was very British. It was very British.
Who showed up.
Oh, yes. No, even more like regular everyday British.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Kind of a thing.
You like kind of trick the demon into drinking like a cup of tea.
Basically. Yeah. No, but. And I didn't have any problem with that because I'm like, well, it's a Constantine book.
It should be very British.
I had no problem with that whatsoever. It was more just sort of the overall use of what they used.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, without spoiling it.
Yeah.
Hard to explain, but yeah.
But you know what I do, you know, I'll probably go back and reread the three issues because it really was a book about, and that's what Constantine is about a lot, is his relationships and how, you know, horrible a lot of relationships that he has and has had over the course of his life. And you get a glimpse into how difficult his childhood was and what a fucking cunt his dad is. And he gets into that relationship, but also the friends that he had growing up, and then always there, you know, ready to be, you know, relied on is Chaz. Chaz is always there and you can always count on him. So I don't understand how Chaz has made it this far. Is he like the only friend of Constantine that hasn't died in 35 years of Hellblazer comics?
Yeah, right. I think he has died a few times though.
Probably.
But I think, yeah, I mean, I think that's a common thing with Constantine is there's always people in his life that are close to him because he's a charming bastard and people want to be close to him. But whenever people get close to him, inevitably really bad things happen. And sometimes it's his fault a lot of times. Sometimes it's not his fault, but either way, he's sort of stuck trying to figure it out. But it sort of is the core of the character because, like you said, he's a bastard and the only thing he cares about are the people that he loves. And so it's really the only way to get him. He's not a hero. You know what I mean? Like, he's not going to go out and do things just for the goodness of his heart or to do the right thing. It's someone that he cares about. He's put in a bad situation. So fuck, now I got to go try and fix this. And this is certainly that. And, you know, goes back to his childhood and
kind of the first time he really fucked up and ruined someone.
And it has Satan in it. And that's Constantine and Satan's relationship is very fun in this book as well.
It's awesome. Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was, it's one of my favorite books I've read off the stands in a while. And once again, DC Black Label. It's I haven't been this fond of a book probably since the Wonder Woman Dead Earth.
Yeah, I love the format. We've talked about it over and over again. I love the format,
good stuff,
the stuff that they're putting out in it for the most part. Yeah, great.
I did see the one that I just missed the first issue and could never find it, and so I missed out on it. I did see that the Question with Jeff Lemire and Dennis Cohen Sienkiewicz is available as a hardcover now.
Oh, there you go.
So I may grab that and get caught up.
It's also probably available
on Hoopla.
I will. Yes, it is. I will probably buy all of these in hardcover when they come out again.
Yeah. I don't know, man. The prestige format.
Fits
real nice on a shelf for the shelf porn out there.
I can't help with the hardcovers.
You like the hardcovers.
I just bought.
Give them his hardcovers.
I just bought with some birthday Amazon gift cards that I got.
Have we wished you a happy birthday on the show yet?
I don't know.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday, Sal.
I bought this, which is the Black Hammer Library Edition.
Oh.
One. Yeah, it's a tome. It's awesome.
Beat someone to death with that.
Yeah.
Is that what the first three volumes and or four volumes?
I don't even know. I don't even know what it has in it. Probably three. I don't think it's that.
Yeah. Man, there's so much supplemental stuff that he's built on in that series. It's hard to keep up with.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I love the original series.
Mm-hmm.
I like some of the supplemental stuff, but not all of it.
The Justice League one was good.
Yeah, the Justice League one was good. Some of it's been really good. Some of it's been okay.
Mm-hmm. That's okay.
I can't. Well, I got a book I read. We actually got sent from Aftershock Comics. We got sent some previews this week of some books that are coming out this Wednesday. So today, if you're listening to this, tomorrow, if you're watching us. And I read one of them that I really liked. It's called Shadow Doctor, number one. And it's based on a true story. It's written by a dude named shit. What's his name? God damn it. Now it's not here. Where is it? Calloway. It's Peter Calloway. It's written by him, and it's a story of his grandfather. And his grandfather in the 1930s was a medical student at the University of Illinois Chicago, graduates. Wants to be a doctor, but because he's black and it's the 1930s, nobody will hire him. And so he's like, well, then I'll go and I'll try and get a loan and I'll open my own private practice. And because he's black and it's the 1930s, no one will give him a loan. And so he does something he doesn't want to do, but he doesn't have any other choice, he feels. And so he joins up with some people that he knew when he was young, and he starts working for Al Capone and running booze in Prohibition era Chicago. And apparently, according to the book, this was basically told to Peter Calloway's father on his grandfather's deathbed. No one knew about it until he was dying, and then he told them the story of him working and how he got to be a doctor and how he, and this is that story. And it was a very good first issue. It was very
real.
Yeah, it was
from the title. That is not what I was expecting this to be.
Well, it's funny because I had seen this, I had actually picked this book on this week's Future Stacks. I had seen the cover and I read the synopsis and I'm like, oh, that sounds really interesting. And then, like I said, Aftershock on Monday sent us preview copies, which I emailed to you guys, but and I just happened to read this one. I'm like, oh, it sounds interesting. And it was really good. It was really well done. To me, it's interesting in so many ways because, one, it's like a completely different perspective on that era in Chicago, Prohibition and Al Capone and that whole thing. And then, two, the fact that it's an actual real story about this guy who went through this is amazing. But the one part in the book that really kind of hit me, It was kind of early on in the book, and it's telling about his grandfather going around. He's a young man. He's out of college, and he's trying to get hired, and no one will hire him, and he's trying to get a bank loan, and no one will give him a bank loan. And everybody sort of tells him the same thing. It's like, sorry, kid, it's nothing personal. And like everybody says that over and over again. And what really struck me about that was, like, you know, the idea of, oh, that's really a great example of, you know, institutionalized racism is that it didn't come off like the people that were telling him no were racists necessarily, but they're in a system that doesn't allow them to not be.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're white working for a bank or working for, running a hospital, white hospital. And it's like, sorry, I can't risk my job by doing the right thing. And that, I don't, it was just that one scene. It was only like one page in the book when that happens. And it was just like, oh, wow. It was kind of a light bulb moment.
Even if they wanted to, the system would not allow them to.
Even if they wanted to yeah. hire yeah. him, they couldn't. Now, you know, I mean, you could say a lot of things about them or someone in that situation of like, well, you know, do the right thing. But the reality of like, okay, I'm going to risk my livelihood and my job and my family and that kind of thing, to do the right thing. That's not always an easy thing to ask anyone to do. But I just thought that was a really interesting, you know, sort of perspective on it. And yeah, it was a very good first issue. I was really glad I read it. Cool. And I hope people pick it up on Wednesday. It was not what I was expecting either. And then there's some back matter in the book about his grandfather. You see pictures of his grandfather and pictures of his father, and you read some stuff that his grandfather had read, or I mean written.
Is he from Chicago?
Yeah. I believe so. I believe he was from Chicago.
Cool.
Originally. I know he went to college here and yeah, but yeah, I believe he was from Chicago originally. Yeah, it was very good. It was really interesting.
I assumed from the title it was about like a doctor from a shadow dimension.
No, yeah. Nothing. There is at least
that would be Dr. Shadow.
Yes, they would call that Dr. Shadow.
This is Shadow Doctor. Now it makes sense. No, well, I'm going to read it. This is
nothing. Nothing.
Yeah, that sounds great, man.
In it all, it was, and it even like when I started to read it, I was like, oh, okay. It was. It kind of threw me for a loop at first, but then it was just the way that he was telling the story, and it was really good. Like I said,
geez, 1920s Chicago. You know, who doesn't want to read about that?
Yeah. And like I said, for, you know, for me, it's like a completely different perspective. Like anytime that's those stories are told, it's always either, you know, the Capone gang and the mafia or Elliot Ness and the FBI or the, you know, cops or whoever. Rarely is it ever, you know, anything other than that. And the interesting thing, I grew up with a guy whose grandfather actually ran booze for Capone. He was a Polish kid, grew up in South Side of Chicago, and he would tell us stories when we were kids. He would talk about, you know, he was a driver and sometimes he would ride shotgun literally for these trucks hauling booze back from from Canada, from Michigan. They would pick him up in Michigan and bring him back. Yeah. And yeah, he had stories. And when he died, my buddy actually, we cleaned out his house and he had a bar and there were two mason jars of white lightning. Like from, I don't know where it went. And we tried them and woo. Yeah, they were fucking rubbing alcohol. But
make you go blind.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But really,
yeah, that's awesome. It's a really interesting book.
Cool. No, I will definitely, I may check that out tonight before I go to bed. Bye. I did want to mention, and Sal wanted me to keep it short because I don't think that you liked it. I'm loving Snowpiercer on TNT right now.
You didn't have to keep it short. Talk about
keep it short.
Well, no, neither one of you guys are watching it, but I would implore you to go back the second season. Give you the short build up to it. By the way, I also tried to read the comic. The TV show is really entertaining. You guys had seen the movie though, right?
I saw the movie. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. The
movie a lot with the
Chris. The movie is cool. Movie is definitely kind of weird, but weird kind of in that, you know, foreign film, you know, film kind of interesting way. But they kind of update the story. It has for all the Hamilton fans out there, David Diggs, who played Lafayette, and Thomas Jefferson plays Layton, the main character, and it's Jennifer Connelly of Rocketeer fame, among others, plays kind of the other lead. She is kind of the head of the train. He is the leader of the tailies, which are the kind of fourth class, you know, lower class passengers on the train. The entire first season is about the revolution of the tailies kind of rising up and trying to create a democracy in the train. The whole idea that the train is, it's a post-apocalyptic, the world is frozen, the train is, you know, circling the earth, can never stop.
Snow train.
Second season, which they're in now, things get crazy awesome. Huh?
It's on a cruise ship.
No, there is a second train.
What?
There is a second train. And the end of the first season, the train collides. And so now they're joined together. So now you have.
It's not how train crashes work.
It's a thing.
It's amazing how.
Find out there's a second train.
Well, it's.
What did we just hit? A second train?
So it was planned, but now these two trains are joined, and all sorts of and Sean Bean is the leader of the people on the other train, and he's crazy awesome, crazy slash awesome in this. It's a lot of fun. I enjoy that.
We're one season away from there being three trains.
Three jokers,
three trains.
Yeah. You got
original train, crazy train, classic.
Some Randy Rhodes in there.
Yeah. So you got a crazy train, your regular snow train.
The haunted Old West.
Haunted Old West train. Yeah. A train that's constantly being robbed.
I don't know how we're not working for Hollywood. I don't get it. These ideas. I don't know how it
has. When you're writing that third season of Snow Train, you know who to hit up.
But it's cool. I enjoy the hell out of it.
Remind me, because when I think of Snowpiercer, I think of the movie with Chris
Evans.
Evans, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. But was there a foreign version of Snowpiercer before that?
No, it's a foreign comic.
Okay, it's a foreign comic. I thought there was like a Korean version or something.
I forget what country the original comic was published in, but I believe it's a foreign comic. And then the thing about the movie is that it was not a huge budget sci-fi movie, just kind of a interesting strong story. I mean, the whole premise is about classism, right? You've got the first, second, and third class
garbage,
yeah,
and they deserve to die. That's the whole premise of it, right? And then
it's the people that stormed the train and got on at the last minute before it left, otherwise they were going to die, were forced to live in kind of the squalor conditions in the back of the train and kind of survive on whatever they, you know, they could.
Now, we talked about this before. Didn't they steal from the first one? They stole the idea of shoving children in the controls from a Justice League comic book. Isn't that right, Tom? Didn't that happen on the...
They jammed an alien inside the computer of the satellite and just lived in there. Like, literally, the body is, like, jammed inside where all the computer stuff.
Well, that was the movie, is that they would steal the children from the tail because they were the only people small enough to get into the engineering spaces and run the train. They ditched that for the TV show.
Listen, you got to do what you got to do to keep things running. I mean, what do you want? What do you want them to do?
You stop, you die.
Yeah.
You stop, you die.
It's two trains. Yeah.
Well, I mean, here's the interesting part, and then we'll move on. But now the tail, which was the, you know, kind of the squalor, poverty stricken part of the train, is now in a position of power because that is the border between the two trains, and that's the point of commerce between the two trains now. So it gets interesting. I love it.
Train politics.
Yeah.
Like Game of Trains.
It is like Game of Trains. Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's good. It's comics related, but I actually like this series better than the movie or the comics.
I haven't been enjoying anything I've been watching, so maybe I'll try.
WandaVision.
WandaVision, of course.
Yeah.
I hate everything.
Yeah, give it. I tell you, just watch like the last like two episodes of the first season. And then jump into the second season. You're good.
What a ringing endorsement of that. Just don't even bother. No,
the first season is good.
You want to get to the two trains?
Two trains is where it's at.
You want to skip ahead and just get like, I just want two trains right away. Don't want to wait around.
Well, I mean, I got to say, two trains and Michael Biehn is really selling me. So,
Sean Biehn.
Yeah. Sean Biehn, sorry.
Yeah. Also good in Mandalorian.
It's not Michael Biehn?
It's Sean Biehn.
I like to have been in the writer's room where someone wrote up on the whiteboard two trains.
All right, guys.
Two trains.
First meeting. We're trying to figure out
two words.
Two trains. Who's got ideas? Who's got an idea for season two? We had a successful season one. But we might move forward. Who's got an idea? Tom, give me an idea. What do you think?
What if there's two trains?
Two trains? Yeah. Can we do that?
I don't know. But maybe. I don't know.
Is that possible?
Two snow trains.
All right. I hate both of you. Sal, do we have any listener email?
We don't have any listener email, but I do have some listener feedback from various social media. Nobody uses
that's how the kids
don't
these days
email. It's like asking them to send me a phone message on my beeper. I don't know. Anyway,
we used to do that. We used to do phone messages.
Yes, we did.
Sure. Leave a voicemail.
You're old. This first one is from. It was a post on AC321, which was Tom King Breaks the Fourth Wall. Friendship Paradox said, "This was a fun episode. It's great to hear Tom being a fan of the show. Although I think every time Sal wanted to ask something, Chris changed the subject."
Fuck me.
You know, this is why you get shit for two trains, because every time.
You guys are two trains, but instead of colliding and going together, you're slamming into each other. Can you not just link up and become one snow train?
I'm not doing a Sal centipede. No.
Yeah. Just slam into Sal, form one unit that's moving forward on the tracks.
This doesn't sound good in any way. I don't know. All right. Next one is from episode 310. We talked about Die Volume 1.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Dodd Strongman said, "Holy shit, I just randomly searched the podcast and found you back. Wow, this is awesome. I remember the format change. I remember watching the live feed of the podcast being recorded in the website. I'm resubscribed." So
hey, nice thanks, to see
you. Yeah, thank you.
Which format change?
I don't know.
There were several.
I've always been good. That's all I
know. The all mime around comics.
And then last but not least, we had some dude on Twitter. Said, "My favorite part of your podcast was the line, 'Who goes broke running a casino?' This is when we were talking last week about Space Bastards. Some dude named Derek Robertson." I don't know who he is. Some dude. Mm-hmm. But he liked the podcast. So there you go.
He did.
He did like listening to it. So
all three watched it and said they enjoyed it. So I was like, good. I'm glad we weren't boring.
I do contractually. I have to give some shout outs to some patrons. We have some new patrons this week. So I want to give a shout out to Carlin Gilroy. Thank you, Carlin, for being a patron. Jennifer Ara, Seth Hurley.
Yeah.
Joshua Smith. Yay. And Matthew Jerns. Thank you guys, all of you, for supporting the show. We hope you are enjoying all of the content we are putting out on patreon.com/aroundcomics. And yes, more coming soon. I know we released the first Tom versus the Freedom Fighters, which I enjoyed very much. So Tom, I had a lot of fun.
I'm glad.
And
I do for you.
just for me. I didn't even post it. I just kept it. I just
it's a little box. It's like that Wu-Tang album.
Yes,
that Martin Shkreli dude.
Shkreli rap album.
I'm only going God to say damn.
It's got that Wu-Tang album. No one's heard it.
Actually, it's in it's in FBI or something now.
Oh. Someone at that guy's listening to it.
The interesting thing about that is, according to something I read, when they sold that to him, in the contract was written that the Wu-Tang Clan, by law, can form and steal it back from him. That was actually written in the contract. So they could break into wherever it is and steal it.
Get it. Oh, I love that. Get the Wu-Tang.
That's a fucking comic book I would read.
But it seems that's it might as well say there's no way you can get back. There's no way to get all the members of the Wu-Tang Clan
this is true.
Together in one place. Historically impossible. Anytime you're going to go see the Wu-Tang Clan, part of the joy of it is who's going to be there. Which ones are there? I don't know. Yeah, you know?
Hey, we'll see. Well, you never know. That's part
you
of
never the, know. It's part of the fun. It's part of the mystery.
If you get three of any of them, you're all right though.
Yeah. I mean, obviously,
is that the one with the RZA or the RZA? Yeah.
Obviously, Big Baby Jesus, R.I.P. Old Dirty Bastard. He's not going to be there.
No.
So,
although never put it past him.
Yeah,
anyone
I would be surprised if Old Dirty Bastard showed up to reform the Wu-Tang to steal that album back from Martin Shkreli.
I want that comic.
On New Year's Eve, I was watching Snoop Dogg's New Year's Eve party on YouTube, just because,
I did not know it existed, but I really wish I would have been watching that all.
I have a soft spot for New Year's thing, like the New Year's shows that are like a little bit messy, right? Like they aren't like totally put together. I mean, all it was Snoop Dogg at his house with like DJs and Snoop Dogg like drinking and smoking the entire time. Like people would call in on Zoom, like Method Man called in and they were just, talking about smoking weed. And then at one point, there's only like 4 minutes left until midnight, right? And you're like, okay, they must be building up to the countdown. But then like Russell Simmons calls in or something, or no, Reverend Run calls in. And I'm like, wait, he has no idea that it's almost midnight. And you can just tell that he doesn't know what's happening. And so some producers in his ear telling him, like, you got to start the countdown. And he's just like, countdown now? Why? Like, he just doesn't know. And
because it's almost time.
He's off by 6 seconds. He doesn't care. I mean, what does Snoop Dogg care? Method Man was on there. Method Man was ripped.
He's jacked now. Yeah.
Oh my God, Jesus Christ. I was worried if the Wu-Tang got back together. Because he might kill somebody to get that.
Yeah,
huge.
I follow his Instagram, and he is putting on poundage. He does a lot of powerlifting stuff and lifts some heavy weights. And he's like in his upper 40s, like. But he's always been a big dude. Like he was always tall, and now he looks like
Jesus Christ, like Method Man. And there you go.
Yeah, don't fuck with the Method Man.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't fuck with the Jesus. All right. Well, guys, do we have any other business to attend to? We got the Patreon stuff all plugged and everything that's coming out. And we talked about funny books and Two Trains. And
Greg Porter said he loves Tom's Around Comics knit cap.
Oh, there you go.
Hey, you could get, well, you can't get that, but you can get other Around Comics stuff at aroundcomics.com/shop if you'd like to buy some Around Comics gear. Or, hey, I'm going to plug my, if you're into jiu-jitsu.
I thought it was a D&D thing.
Well, I might do a D&D thing with it too. I just came, Roll or Die jiu-jitsu brand of clothing. You can go to rollerdie.com or rollerdie.thread.
Oh, I'll be back in a sec.
Where are you going?
What?
My dog's got to go pee. Come here.
Your dog's got to go. What? This guy's so unprofessional, Tom. How have we put up with this for 15
years? We're almost done.
And he goes and just walks off. My dog has to go. My dog's
got to go. It's well, like Snoop Dogg. It's like a Snoop Dogg's New Year.
It was a Snoop Dogg New Year.
Also, Snoop Dogg at one point was talking to CNN, and Snoop Dogg, being a professional, immediately switched to no swearing. Like the second he was on Snoop CNN. Dogg,
it is amazing. Snoop Dogg has become America's guest. He is like,
oh, he's on everything.
He is. He's on every. He is. Everyone loves Snoop Dogg, from like little kids to grandmothers.
Martha Stewart.
Everywhere. And everyone fucking loves Snoop Dogg. He's America's guest now. He is just.
God damn it. In 1993, Snoop Dogg was scary. And my parents were frightened of Snoop Dogg.
Not anymore, man. Your parents love Snoop Dogg. Your parents are buying Snoop Dogg brand.
Now my dad's excited. Oh, Snoop Dogg's on.
Oh, I love the Snoop Dogg.
Is that Snoop Dogg? Huh? Is that Snoop Dogg?
Is that the D-O-double-G?
Yeah.
Spark one up.
It's so excited.
Yeah. All right. Guys, always fun. We'll be back later this week with more ACTV, and then Sal's Days of Future Stacks on the Patreon, and then next Tuesday with our live stream and audio Thursday, podcast.
ACD&D.
Thursday. Yep. ACD&D.
Three people doing very broad accents. For
some better than others. Yeah, I just have a long list of. I'm a bard, so I have a long list of Scottish insults for my vicious mockery.
Don't worry. The nice thing was that the other person that's in the group, Tony, who's been my friend since kindergarten, we immediately just attacked Chris relentlessly. The chemistry.
Is there a chance your characters might murder his character while he's sleeping?
No, because they need my fucking bardic inspiration.
We just made fun of the fact that he was playing bagpipes. We just kind of gave him a little
hard time.
We actually all got along really well.
Swingingly.
Yeah, it was the most fun I have had playing Dungeons and Dragons. There he goes again. He's just
left again. Jesus Christ. Dog
have to take a shit now. What?
Do it.
Nothing. We're just wondering if
this isn't Snoop Dogg's New Year's celebration. Okay.
I have a 16-year-old dog. Whenever she gets up, one of two things is happening. She is going upstairs to go to bed, or she is going to go pee on a rug. So I had to let her out, and the door was open, and it's fucking cold. So I had to close the door. There you go.
All right.
Behind the scenes.
Anyway, but yeah, I had a blast playing Dungeons & Dragons. Can't wait till Thursday to play again. It was so much fun.
It'll be fun. I'm gonna try and make it this week.
You're gonna make it. Where's Marta? Get her in here. I will make her.
That's the thing. I need to get her like sleepy time before we start playing, and then I can
just come back. You're gonna roofie your. You're gonna Bill Cosby your wife,
so you can play
Dungeons and Dragons.
It's about as sick and twisted as I get. You know, it's here, with like valerian tea.
Have some more red wine. Here you go. Fill up the glass all the way to the top. Just have more. I've opened the bottle. You might as well finish it.
Let's live life.
Oh, go to bed. It'll be fine. I'll stay up. I'll amuse myself. Here's this shitty Scottish accent.
Yeah, if you hear a shitty Scottish accent.
What the fuck is he watching in that?
Why did he just say fucking cunt?
Bad, like Chris has got bagpipe music.
See, Tom, how much fun we could have if you join the D&D. Every other Thursday, think about it.
It's fun. All right. So all that happening, we will be back next Tuesday for our regular show. In the meantime.
In between time.
We'll be everywhere in
and around.
And around Gobbix. Comics.